Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Kiddushim, the imperative to rebuke, a call to dialogue. During Pesach, please take the opportunity to discuss Pardes, its programs, and its podcasts with your friends and family during the Pesach holiday season. Remember that the podcast can be enjoyed by people either through a portable device, such as an iPod, an iPhone, an Android phone, some sort of portable listening device, or you can listen to the podcast directly on your computer speakers. A lot of people think that you need some sort of iPod in order to listen to a podcast, but that's not the case. And when you tell people they can listen to it on the computer, that often helps out folks who would find that easier. Also, remember to mention about the Pardes summer programs. I'd very much appreciate that if you could tell people about the three-week programs. They happen in June, July, and August, and also the one-week executive seminar. Any one of those programs would be a fantastic opportunity for that person to study in Jerusalem under the master teachers of Pardes. You can find out more information on the Pardes website. And you may see someone at your Seder or during the rest of the holiday where they're thinking about doing something longer term in Israel. I urge you to encourage them to do so. It's a wonderful thing to do. I studied at Pardes for a year in Jerusalem when I was in my late 30s, and people do that at any age, starting with Pardes, starting after they've completed university. So people stop out during medical school or after university or before law school, when they're in their 20s or 30s or 40s or older, studying for a year at Pardes is a wonderful thing to do. And there are also longer programs, too. Thanks for your time and talking about Pardes. I very much appreciate it. And this week, as I mentioned, Kiddushim, The Imperative to Rebuke, A Call to Dialogue, by Rabbi Meir Schweiger. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes, and he also serves as the Mashgiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. There is a handout for this podcast, which I'm sending as the next episode, so please print out the handout so you can use it to follow along with Rabbi Schweiger. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat Kiddushim. As we have discussed in a previous podcast, Parshat Kiddushim is one of three parshiot in the Torah, which is filled with laws, ben adam lechavero, interpersonal relations. Today I would like to focus in on one of those laws, the mitzvah of rebuking someone. I have attached a source sheet, which you can use to accompany the podcast or for later reference. Let us begin with Leviticus chapter 19, verse 17. Do not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke him, and not bear sin on his behalf. Let us look for a moment at reference 3, Maimonides, in the Sefer HaMitzvot, as he describes the mitzvah of rebuking. He, God, has commanded us to rebuke the sinner, or one who intends to sin, and forestall him by way of verbal rebuke. It is not right that one say, since I am not going to sin, it is not my business if another sins. He will be tried by God. This is the opposite of the Torah. Rather, we are commanded neither to sin nor to allow other compatriots to disobey. If he attempts to disobey, we are obligated to rebuke him and return him. Maimonides is presupposing that the reason that I rebuke somebody is because they are sinning or about to sin. And he assumes that the reason why the Torah gives me this imperative is because of a natural human tendency, which I would even say is very common nowadays. Live and let live. I do my thing, you do your thing. Why should I interfere in someone else's life? Who am I to make a value judgment on what they're doing? It's none of my business. That's that person's personal accounting with God. And Maimonides says, in very definitive terms, this is the opposite of the Torah. we are commanded not only not to sin, but not to allow others, our compatriots, to sin. It is our responsibility to react to their negative behavior. As I mentioned, this is something which runs very much counter to our modern sensibilities, putting a value judgment, interfering in somebody else's business. Let us go back to reference 2, a quote from Proverbs, chapter 3, verse 12. He whom God loves, he rebukes, even as a father rebukes the son in whom he delights. There are two things that we actually see from this verse. God rebukes those who he loves, comparable to a father who rebukes the son in whom he delights. The first thing that we see is that rebuking someone is an expression of love, of care. When I say, it's none of my business to get involved in somebody else's life, that's expressing a sense of detachment. The Torah is expecting of us to care about other people, to care about them to the point where we seek out their good, where it hurts us that they may be hurting themselves. And as a result of that, in the same way that a father is interested in his son's well-being, would like to maximize his potential, we should have that feeling to all of our fellow men. A second thing, perhaps, that we can also see is that rebuking should be coming from a place of love. And perhaps if we go back to the verse, when it says, do not hate your brother in your heart, you shall surely rebuke him, the Torah may be pointing to an opposite reaction which Maimonides is describing. Namely, when I see someone sinning, there may be a sense of indignation, abhorrence, revulsion that can cause within me a sense of hate. And the Torah is saying, do not hate them, love them. And the way you show that love is by rebuking them. Hate will lead to distancing. Hate will lead to alienation. Hate will lead to hostility and conflict. Rebuking can, in fact, open up a dialogue. It can lead to better understanding. It can lead to improvement. It can lead to comradeship. Hence, do not hate, rebuke. In reference number 4, Masechet Arachin, there is a fascinating two statements that are made. Rabbi Tarfon said, I wonder if there is anyone in this generation who can accept rebuke. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, I wonder if there is anyone in this generation who knows how to give rebuke. When Rabbi Tarfon says, I wonder if there is anyone who can accept rebuke, what was true in his generation is certainly true in our generation. Very often people do not like having someone rebuke them. And the reason for that is because people are filled with pride. When someone rebukes you, they are pointing out your failures. They are somehow putting down your ego. In order to accept rebuke, one needs to have a sense of humility. A humility which allows them to be self-critical. A humility which ultimately allows them to grow. The purpose of rebuking is to enable that person to grow, but they have to be open to that. Very often people have self-images of perfection, are not prepared to see their faults, and are tremendously offended when they are rebuked, when someone points out their shortcomings. But there is also the other side of the coin. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, I wonder if there is anyone in this generation who knows how to give rebuke. Rebuking is an art. I mentioned earlier, rebuking should be coming from a place of love, not of hate. It is meant to open up a dialogue. How often is it that people point out other people's failures, shortcomings, in a hostile way? How often is it done in a self-righteous way? How often is it done in a demeaning way? But that is not the point of rebuking. The point is not to disgrace, to humiliate. The point of rebuking is to empower. Let us look at reference number 6. Maimonides describes how one does it. Look at reference 6, halakha 8. When one rebukes his fellow, he should not speak harshly to him at first, thereby shaming him, as it is written, "You shall not bear a sin on his account." I might think that one should rebuke until his face changes color. Therefore, it is written, "You shall not bear a sin." Maimonides brings up how one goes about rebuking his fellow. He should not embarrass him. If I go back to Halakha 7, one who rebukes his friend, whether regarding interpersonal matters or matters related to God, should rebuke him privately. He should address him calmly and softly and inform him that he is telling him these things for his own well-being. If he accepted, good. If not, he should rebuke him a second and third time. And he should continue to rebuke until the sinner strikes him and says, "I will not listen." Note what Maimonides says. The first thing of rebuking someone is that it should be done privately, not publicly. Doing this in a public way would open up the potential for tremendous embarrassment. Speak to him calmly, softly. Tell him that you are saying this for his own well-being. There is actually a very interesting story in the Tanakh, which I think illustrates in a very beautiful way how one rebukes. And this is the story of Bilam and his donkey, the talking donkey. Without going into all the details of the story, Bilam, a non-Jewish prophet, is on his way to curse the Jews. God sends an angel who 3 times crosses his path. The donkey sees the angel. Bilam doesn't. Each time the donkey tries to avoid the angel, either trying to veer off the road, going off into a fence, or just sitting down. And 3 times Bilam hits the donkey, presumably for the donkey going off course. And lo and behold, all of a sudden the donkey speaks and engages Bilam in a dialogue. This is Numbers, Bamidbar, chapter 22, verse 28. And God opened up the mouth of the donkey, and the donkey said to Bilam, "What did I do to you that you have hit me 3 times? Note what the donkey did. The donkey didn't say, "Why did you do this?" The donkey said, "What did I do that you hit me 3 times? When one rebukes somebody, the first step is to have a question which is not threatening at all, and through that question to engage that person in a dialogue. If someone hurts you, instead of saying to them, "You hurt me, why did you do that?" you could say, "What did I do that led you to do this type of thing?" Put the blame on yourself. Why do that? First of all, an important part in rebuking is to not put the other person on the defensive. Secondly, it could be that maybe you really did do something wrong to that individual. It could be that maybe you don't understand what they were doing. And therefore, the word tochacha can actually be understood as clarification. And maybe this is the purpose, that a certain situation is clarified to the perpetrator of the crime or the ostensible crime, but maybe it's also clarified to the one who is rebuking. If I'm really coming from a place of love, then maybe I need to really understand that person. By the same token, we find in the beginning, when Adam and Eve sinned and ate of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. God's response was to approach Adam and say, Ayeka, where are you? Which was meant to open up a dialogue where Adam could potentially confess that he had done something wrong, could explain why he did it, which could then lead to an interchange which could have led to a much more constructive result. By the same token, when Cain killed Abel, God comes to him and says, where is Abel your brother? All of these examples show how important it is for rebuke to be coming from a place of love, how important it is for rebuke to be trying to somehow clarify a situation, to open up a dialogue, to allow for the possibility of that individual coming to some sort of self-realization, if in fact they've done something wrong. And I would even add, to also allow for the possibility that maybe I am making a wrong judgment. And therefore, if rebuke is done the proper way, it is not self-righteous, it is not condemning, it is not hostile, but it is something which is trying to invite a discussion, a clarification, to ultimately bring a greater understanding to the two of us, to enable us to continue in our relationship. If one does not know how to rebuke, then one will not achieve the goal in terms of bringing a certain awareness to the other side. On the other hand, for this goal to happen, it requires for the other side to be willing to engage in that introspection, self-examination, to be open to criticism, to ultimately be seeking what is the right thing for them to be doing. Unfortunately, we have very few examples in the Tanakh of people who are rebuked, who accept the rebuke, even when it's done in the best of ways. I go back to the speaking donkey. When the donkey said, what have I done that you have hit me 3 times? Bilam's response is, you have hit Allah. This is chapter 22, verse 29. He said, because you have played with me. If I had a sword, I would kill you. And note the donkey's response. But am I not your donkey that you have ridden on from time immemorial? Have I ever done anything that's endangered you? And Bilam's response is no. Note the fact that Bilam is someone who has great difficulty in accepting rebuke. He doesn't want to hear what the donkey is saying. He's ready to just kill him. And that perhaps is very much indicative of Bilam, who is very, very self-centered. Ultimately, the donkey triumphs by adopting that position of love. Ultimately, he gets Bilam to recognize that he has never endangered, never offended Bilam, so that maybe Bilam should ask himself, what's going on over here? And in fact, when Bilam at least acknowledges the fact that the donkey has in fact been faithful to him, lo and behold, there is a revelation of the angel. And all of a sudden, Bilam now understands why the donkey did what he did. In the case of Bilam, this doesn't dramatically change his attitude. He continues on the course that he was going. I would like to insert now also, come back to something which the Rambam mentioned. There is a tendency very often to not rebuke people, because in a certain way we write them off. What's the point of doing it? They're not going to listen to me anyway. There's a lack of faith in people, in their ability to change. Perhaps there's also a lack of faith in our ability to somehow engage them in dialogue. This may be another element which the Torah is trying to impress upon us. Do not give up. Have faith in people. Do not write them out. People can change. The halakha definitely recognizes the possibility of people not changing. And the halakha recognizes that there comes a certain point where rebuking is counterproductive. Where if it comes to a point where by bringing up the point that will just lead to further hostility, then one should stop. As it says in reference 5 in Masechet Yevamot, just as it is a mitzvah for a man to say that which will be accepted, so is it a mitzvah for a man not to say that which will not be accepted. And Rabbi Abba said it is obligatory not to say it, as it says in Proverbs 9:8, do not rebuke a scorner, lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise person, and he will love you. Which means that before we rebuke someone, we need to have a sense of who that person is. We need to have a sense of what may speak to that person. Rebuking is not something which is just done off the cuff. It is not something which is done on a gut impulse. One has to think through carefully. Who am I talking to? What can they hear? How can they hear it? When can they hear it? One needs to pick the appropriate venue, time, words to do it. If I don't think through carefully how I'll do it, it will not lead to the desired result. It will just lead to a confrontation, to hostility. And therefore, it is better sometimes to not say things rather than say something which will just lead to greater enmity. Having said that, there is also the danger of people who then just wash their hands and say, well, these people will never change, or I am incapable of doing it, so let me just lead my life, let them lead their lives. And Maimonides has already said, the Torah doesn't let us get off the hook so easily. There's a fascinating statement in the Talmud, reference number 7, from Masechet Shabbat. Anyone who is able to protest the behavior of members of his household and doesn't is grabbed for the sins of his household. For the people of his city is grabbed for them. For the whole world is grabbed for them. This statement is saying, if we are in a position where we can speak out and we don't, we ultimately are held accountable for the wrongs, for the evils that people are doing. It is not enough to just be righteous and be concerned with your own relationship with God. We need to be activists. We need to be involved. We need to care. When we see wrong, we need to speak out. But we also need to know how to do it in a way that will be heard. This is the challenge of the Torah. This is the mitzvah of rebuking. If we learn how to master this mitzvah, we can perhaps create a better world. We can perhaps invite more harmony. Before we take on the world, let us begin in our inner circles. Whether it be with our parents, our children, our spouses, our close friends, our community. That's the place to start. Let us do it with love, with compassion, with care, and with faith that in the end, we can in fact create a better reality. We are now in the period of the Omer, the 50 days between Pesach and Shavuot. It is a period which in the Middle Ages became associated with mourning, because of the massacres of the Crusades. But it is interesting that halachic literature connects it with the death of Rabbi Akiva's students and with the explanation that the reason they died was because they did not know how to honor each other. This is a time of growth, of transformation, of community building. Let us use the mitzvah of rebuking towards that end, so that we, our families, and our communities can come closer together and create a better reality. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.